Hello and welcome to Origins, the programme that asks musicians, writers, filmmakers and creators where it all began, how it evolved and where it's at. In this episode, Sophie Porter catches up at South by Southwest in Austin, Texas with filmmaker Peter Michael Dowd and Akio Sakurai, a Jimmy Page revivalist, otherwise known as Mr. Jimmy.
So, I was just hoping that we could just start by setting the scene. I'd really love to know if you could recall for us the first time that you each heard Led Zeppelin. Like, where were you? How did it make you feel?
Okay, I can start. I was 16. I was going to high school in Boston. I had a ride with a senior who lived there. And usually, to be honest, he would play sort of shitty music, like Winger and whatever the shitty music was of the late 80s and early 90s. So I would always say, like, okay, he's going to play his music again, like, whatever. This time was different. I remember he reached for a white cassette, put it in. Whole Lot of Love, right? And my brain was like, what is this? You know, it was a riff that Whole Lot of Love riff to me was like a Beethoven kind of riff. It was so perfect. It was a perfect creation. And then when the drums came in, cracking drums, what is this? And the vocal. And you go through the verse and I'm thinking, this is some sort of savage sonic symphony or something like that. And then you get to the bridge of the song and they take this perfect thing and they throw it away. They just take this beautiful riff that any other band would spend a lifetime to make one riff like that. And they would wrap their arms around it and never let it go. But Led Zeppelin took, Jimmy Page took the Whole Lot of Love riff and then threw it away for the bridge. And the theremin comes and this crazy percussion. And Robert Plant is having an orgasm. I'm 15 years old. I don't even know if I've ever had an orgasm. So I'm like, what is it? And then you come back to Bonham cracking on the drums and Page with his savage solo and back to the riff again. And I think maybe that was my first orgasm. I don't know. But it was unbelievable. And all day at school, in my little Jesuit school in Boston, Boston College High School, I was fantasizing not about a girl, but I was fantasizing about that song and putting that tape in and having that experience again. So it just seared something in my brain that as I bought each album after the next, it was just a fucking amazing journey of discovery. Each album was sort of like another universe. You know, Jimmy Page always talks about it as it's sort of a statement of where they were at that time. So, you know, the second album sort of recorded on the road, and Presence is a totally different experience of where the band was at. And each album was like opening a new universe to me. And then getting into the live stuff later with the bootlegs, that's like an entire second, or that's another 10 universes. So that all from that one day riding with that senior. Thank God he didn't put in another Winger cassette. No disrespect. God bless Winger. But that moment, I mean, it's just a funny thing, that white cassette. I'll never forget it.
The first time I heard Led Zeppelin, which was also shown in the film, was when I was in high school. My friend, Hiroshi Kokai, invited me to his house, and he played a Led Zeppelin record for me. Until then, I knew about Zeppelin songs. In my teenage years in Japan, everyone was listening to foreign music, American and British rock, and Led Zeppelin was one of those. The Led Zeppelin music I first heard when I was 15 years old was extremely complicated. And then I started playing guitar, and about 3 years later, when I turned 17, Hiroshi let me listen to the song again. And that time, the music immediately entered my body. That album was called Zeppelin IV, their fourth album. And just like Peter said, from the first song I thought, what is this sound? It felt so made or produced and polished. especially Stairway to Heaven. In this song, it was exactly like its title. It's heaven made in the image of paradise that's so sacred. For instance, the sounds the music was made, everything from the music to the composition, everything. And the reason that I decided to do Jimmy Page was because I was so impressed, and also because of the record that I bought, Houses of the Holy, the first song of that album called The Song Remains the Same. When I heard that song, I was like, what is this guitar? It was a style of playing I'd never heard before. Even with all the other bands and guitarists at that time, I'd never heard that style of guitar playing. That immediately was a shock to my system, and I decided, I have to do this. And that's when I decided to do it.
Miles and miles, like, away from each other, only for, like, years later to kind of meet and, I suppose, like, become united by this band. So I'd really love to know then how you met, and then, yeah, like, how that then became the catalyst for this film. It's a great film.
Yeah, are you? Yeah. Please. Okay. So, yeah, so I, late one night, I saw on YouTube a clip. I think it was Rain Song, Nebworth 79. And I saw Akio, I saw Mr. Jimmy, the double neck, yellow guitar strap, blue button-down shirt, white khaki pants, loafers. And my ears, I heard the Rain Song, but I heard the 1979 tone and arrangement. And I recognize that outfit, you know, that's the outfit that Jimmy Page wore on August 4th, 1979. And there's a million tribute bands in the world, and most of them, honestly, are not that good. But here was somebody who didn't have the black dragon suit or the bolero outfit or the white dragon suit. He had tracked down this outfit from Jimmy Page's... everything Jimmy Page does is cool, but, you know, from maybe one of his more obscure looks. Who would track down the Nebworth outfit? Who would go to JCPenney or wherever the store was and find this blue shirt, that outfit? You know, most people, they want to be the cool guy with the dragon suit or whatever. I thought, this guy's crazy, but also he's great. And then I clicked again, and it was a 1970s show, and Mr. Jimmy had a beard on, and it was a totally different tone, and... He had the high-watt amplifier, 1970. So, you know, he was not only recreating the costume, he was creating the aura. And most importantly, he was creating the tone. You know, because ultimately that's what this whole thing is about, is Jimmy Page's singular sound. So to find somebody across the world who was committed to 360 degrees of that experience of what Jimmy Page offered, I said, I don't know the story at all yet, but I know this is a movie. And I also sort of recognized that I recognized all these details. So I thought, well, maybe I'm the guy to tell it. So Mr. Jimmy has a website in Japan, and they had a little contact form. And I sent in a email. I had no plan, no next thought, no nothing. And I just said, I'm a documentary filmmaker. I'm a lifelong Led Zeppelin fan. I have a feeling what you're doing is incredible, and I want to tell it, and I want to tell it correctly. Please let me know if you're interested. And Jimmy's amazing wife Junko wrote back. She said, you must be a pretty lucky guy, because Mr. Jimmy just moved to Los Angeles. So by then I thought, this is some sort of sign, you know, now I'm like, well, now it's almost out of my hands. I have to make this movie. So we started, and we first met. I mean, I have to say, I've filmed this man for over 3.5 years. I can't even count how many shows. Big venues, small venues, venues where I thought his talent is even bigger than this place. He should be playing in a bigger space. No matter what the occasion, no matter what the crowd, no matter what the opportunity, no matter how big or small the stage was, never for one moment did I see him not 100% in it, feeling it, living it with 100% passion. That is the one thing I'll never forget about this guy. You would think after 20, 30, 40, 100 shows, maybe tonight he's going to half-ass it, or maybe he's not going to be 100%. He's like a method actor. Anyway, it's been beautiful knowing him.
Well, it's like as he was mentioning, I was in Los Angeles, and I just started working with the band Led Zepp again. And even before, I had been thinking, I don't speak English, and until then, I had no experience living overseas. The music is British rock, so rock is in the English language, but I thought of it as worldwide music, and I thought this would definitely connect all kinds of people. So no matter how big the distance, music will connect you. And that was the way I was thinking. And then they contacted me. I guess that's it. And the rest, I think Peter mentioned.
Going to California with an achy in my heart.
And I want to ask a little bit about your process as like a filmmaker as well, like editing the movie, because I know you said about it took like 3.5 years and to like do the filming, and I think last night you were saying that you kind of like film then edit as you go. And I was wondering, because I imagine when you're filming something that is like a real life story, and you're filming like kind of, I suppose, documenting that, does that kind of, I suppose, help with the accuracy of telling that story? And was there any like event that was sort of unforeseen whilst filming that, if you'd happily like let us.
I think at first, the first thing is, I until you meet somebody and film them or just get a sense of what they're like as a character, really, you don't know. So at first I thought, well, let's just see, let's start filming and see, maybe it'll be a nice short film. And I remember the first interview I asked Jimmy, you know, he pulls out the Harmony Sovereign acoustic guitar, and he's like, this is the make and model guitar that Jimmy Page recorded the Rain Song. And he begins to play, and it's not I can't describe it. It's not like it was a copy of the song or a cover of the song. It was the song. That original recording, as Jimmy can say, has more than one guitar, but the essence of it is that Harmony Sovereign guitar. And as he played it in front of me, I felt something really special inside. I felt that song. And I afterwards, I just asked him, because in addition to figuring out the guitar and the tone, it has a very unusual tuning, very special tuning. I said, so how long did it take you to figure out the song? And he said, 35 years. And I said, ha ha ha. You know, I laughed because I thought, 35 years, learn a song, okay. And he just looked at me like, no, and Jimmy's too nice to say something like "fuck you" or something, get out of here. But he was looking at me like, I worked on this song for 35 years, and I'm still working on it. And I still will listen to a song, and if I can discover one note, that inspires him, that makes his day. And I thought, this isn't a short film. That moment I said, this is not going to be a short film. This is a lifetime story. And then all along the way, I thought, oh, maybe joining Zep again, coming to the EX Theater to do the fourth night show, maybe that's the end, because that seems like such an achievement to me. Because what the EX Theater does, I mean, nobody does what the EX Theater does. They recreate the lighting, the lighting cues, the pyrotechnic cues. You know, they bring in people to hand operate the spots, you know, because that's how it was done in 1970. I mean, anything, the mirror backdrop, anything you think of. I thought, well, maybe this is the top of the mountain. And then Jimmy told me, I'm not satisfied. I need to get to a higher level with a band that's going to really stick to my vision, and I'm leaving the band. That was a shock. I said, okay. I think many filmmakers would have said, I've been filming this for a year plus. Maybe that's okay. I can end the movie and have a credit. Jimmy left the band. But I fucking hate movies like that. I hate movies where it's like, well, due to the filmmaker's schedule, I'm just going to wrap it up. I was like, well, now Jimmy's kind of taking a big risk. Now he's come to America. Zep again was kind of safe in a way. Zep again, very easy to, you know, he could play a lot of shows. Now he is risking it all to now he's going to try a new band in a foreign country, not speaking the language, trying to find musicians who are going to match the level. And then I thought, well, the whiskey show will be the end of the movie, because now he's got amazing players around him. Frankie Benali is amazing, and this is, they're recreating Led Zeppelin's first ever concert in the same venue with a Rickenbacker amplifier. No tribute band has ever performed that set list, by the way, in the history of the world. You know, the covers, Zeppelin at that time didn't have enough original music to do all their own songs. They were doing covers like Fresh Garbage, As Long As I Have You. No tribute band has ever done that set list in the world. And no tribute band has ever done that on a Rickenbacker amplifier solid state. I'm thinking, this is the end of the movie. And then there were complications with the band and the singer and the singer's girlfriend being the manager. And I thought, I can't end it. Okay, and then they sort of, the band broke up again. And I thought, well, I need to see what happens next. And I asked Jimmy, are you staying or are you going back to Japan? And you put so much into this, 35 years plus of work. And he said, something is going to, I work too hard. I cannot quit. And I said, I don't know how long it's going to take, but I believe in this guy. Something's going to happen. And then, of course, Jason Bonham calls and says, come on out. And then, you know, we've got a show in Sydney, Australia. And I'm like, great, now we've got our happy ending. And then that show, I think, was delayed 6 months. And I'm like, that's okay. I can wait. I can edit. I can work on somebody else's movie to try and keep this one going. And then, you know, the Mr. Jimmy band got, you know, he reformed that. And I'm like, okay, I can keep shooting. I can show that he's still doing his own Mr. Jimmy shows, full power, full authenticity. Anyway, so yeah, all along the way, things didn't go as planned, but that's life. And I'm lucky to have filmed this guy's journey and for him to trust me with the ups and the downs, because I know that's very difficult to reveal. Some things are great, some things were really tough. But I think anyone who watches this movie, the one thing they cannot question is his commitment to the music. Yeah.
Kind of answered one of the questions I was going to ask next about how, like, it's so evident that Jimmy just, like, he will not take, you know, you leave with your heart and you're so committed to it. And I think that there's, like, it's such a beautiful bit of advice that you shouldn't compromise your, like, artistic integrity. And one of my questions was going to be, like, what did you learn from that? And obviously that, I suppose, Jimmy's journey kind of, yeah, like, motivated you to just carry on, like, with the film.
Jimmy can talk about this. You know, his commitment to doing things the right way in every regard totally shaped the movie. But yeah, maybe Jimmy can talk about, like, why is it important for you to not compromise your tone and the things everyone wants you to say? Oh, do it easy.
Okay.
The reason for that is this is rock music that everyone knows really well. But it's really no longer just rock music. In the 10 years of being together, they created a very unique sound, something no other band has been able to do. It's been 30 years since their breakup. Actually, 40 years, because they broke up in 1980. So it's been about 40 years since the breakup, and I completely believe that this is the real, that they are the real meaning of classic rock. Say, for instance, take classical music. Which people listen to? Is there a concert where they play in t-shirt and jeans? People dress up to go see the concert, and the musicians are all dressed in tuxedos. That's the shape of how things are. Well, Led Zeppelin is just like that. The music and, of course, the costumes are also very important. If I were to wear a costume that's wrong, then the fans that really love Zeppelin's music wouldn't really be able to actually immerse themselves in the music. For example, in the world of movies, say you decide to make a remake of the Dracula movie. So you keep the script as is, but you bring it into the modern day. Then the audience that loves the classic horror movie Dracula won't be able to immerse themselves in the film. And say Dracula is driving a car at night in search of his prey, then the story becomes something completely different. So it's really important to make an authentic remake. And music is the same. It's not always about new things. It doesn't mean that it makes it better. And that's why I don't use the convenient digital stuff, but instead use analog. And that's why I don't compromise. That's all.
Standing on the dark, right? If he's standing on the city lights, like Texas, you know, people never get into the movie. People never get into the story. Such a wonderful horror story. Yeah, I read the original book. A long time. I always reading, over 100 pages. Yeah, I love that. Something like that. If I play Zeppelin music, you know, standing here, colored, something like this, LA rock and roll style, nobody can get into the music. If I play something light style lyric, easy, with a Stratocaster, no, people never get into my music. That's why. I want to remake detail, such a small detail, even edge of finger detail, which position keep pushing, how to handing, pick, which position he used this, pick, you know, pick is like this. Totally different everywhere. Yeah, that's a detail. Yeah, so the crazy. Not amazing, crazy. Sorry.
Last night was the premiere of the film, the world premiere. And I mean, we've already said, but me and Andrew are not embarrassed to say that we genuinely did tear up quite a few points in that movie. Like, it really was incredibly moving, and I would love to know what it was like for you both to see that film, like, on a big screen in Texas for the premiere.
I mean, really, it's a dream come true. I mean, this whole movie, I don't think I can say how honored I was to tell the story of Mr. Jimmy. This music, you know, changed my life when I was 15 years old. In my dreams, I would have been on a plane with Led Zeppelin on the Starship filming everything they were doing, you know, and filming a tour, but this was in a way my chance to somehow pay tribute to how that music affected me and everyone around the world, and how Akio has given his soul to it. And also, it was so much work, you know, 3.5 years and taking other jobs to keep it going, and going to Japan 4 times. And I thought about my amazing crew, who made so many sacrifices just to work on this movie. Some who took deferred payments, some who worked for free, some who even gave money so we could keep filming. To have everybody there in one room at probably the best film festival in the world for music, it was a fucking honor of a lifetime. I mean, I just felt like, wow, we did it. And the most amazing endorsement was, I got an email maybe an hour before the show. My phone died, so I didn't get it. So I thought I was in still legal jeopardy, but we got an email an hour before saying that Warner had approved the music for the festival rights. Oh, so that was amazing, because that on some level means that the people who made this music, you know, this is their baby. So for them to somehow appreciate, I cannot tell you how special it is. For them to appreciate what we did and what he did for 35 years. I don't know if that's ever happened, but oh yeah, it was the honor of a lifetime.
When you first started doing the movie, there were times that I thought, I wonder if the movie will really be made. The reason being because there was so much drama, so many things happening. The distress from quitting the band Led Zepp again. And then after I left the band, I had no job and I couldn't find any members. I auditioned over 15 singers but couldn't find anyone. And he really watched over me during that whole time, for a long time. There was nothing to film, but he stayed by my side. And I would wonder, if it will really be done. With all the drama that happened, how is he going to wrap it into an hour and a half? And I was just always wondering. But he did it, and I got the offer from Jason's band, and there were a lot of other things that happened. And then yesterday at the venue, I was actually able to see the film with the audience. I was so happy, and I just couldn't believe that I was seeing myself in the film right in front of my eyes. My wife was there with me, and I was watching myself playing, and the sound was so real. I was filled with deep emotion. I really hope and pray that maybe there will be a new genre or something to come from people watching this film. And not just a party band or a tribute band. There's so many people that love the music from that generation. So I would really love to see more shows that the people would be able to enjoy. Not just music that you enjoy while you're drunk. And that's what I was talking to my wife about the other day and was hoping for as I watched the film. And he's the one person in the world that really understands me, besides my wife, and that won't change. And Zeppelin music, people really change with the technology as it progresses. For example, when cars become electric, then people shift to electric cars. But I believe that everybody should really stay in the world of analog, otherwise we'll forget it. So those things that are good, we have to make sure that they're kept around. I will never be able to be Jimmy Page, but I will work on continuing to help keep his legacy as much as I can. And kind of going back to the previous question, that's why I don't change things. I use and do things just like he did. The guitar position, the licks, etc.
He says, I can't do the solo on the acoustic guitar, so if you want the solo, come to the show on Wednesday.
further information on Peter Akio and the film, visit www.mrjimmymovie.com.